Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. It's the Good Growing with the Garden Guy with Gary Heilich. Welcome, Gary.
Nice to be back in the studio.
That's right. You were out for a couple times, but we're glad to have you here. You even have your daughter in the studio audience.
Yeah, she. I tried to get her to be on, but she's kind of grinning over here. She doesn't want to do it.
And, of course, we have my sister, which is Sue Majure. She's down in the greater Kalamazoo area. Welcome again, Sue.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. You can tell your daughter, Gary, that I, too, was reluctantly dragged into this, and it turned out to be so much fun. I don't regret it. You can tell her if she gives it a whirl, she won't regret it either.
She can hear you. Well, it's not too late. You can always put on some earphones and turn that microphone over there.
Well, we're going to have a quiz on a unique subject, and we were talking. It's lentils.
Okay, let me tell you why I chose lentils.
Okay, please do.
I was on a special diet about a month ago, trying to reset, I guess it's my pancreas, because I have diabetes. And we could only eat vegetable protein, which included beans, lentils, tofu, soy, things of that sort. And so I said, oh, we haven't had a quiz on lentils. So that's how we're doing it.
Well, I went to the Country Life warehouse a number of years ago. They are a wholesale supplier to a number of places, businesses, and institutions, and individuals. And I was just amazed at how many colors of lentils. That was the highlight of my tours, is seeing like 7 different colors of lentils.
And I never ate lentils till I was an adult.
Oh, really?
And I liked them the first time I tasted them, especially if you make spicy lentils.
Very good.
And all right.
We're right in the height of harvest season, so we can talk a little bit about how the season has gone this year, too.
Okay. So now the quiz.
Well, how about a word of prayer?
All right.
Sue, would you lead us in a word of prayer?
Sure. Heavenly Father, thank you for allowing us the technology to be able to reach out and meet with many people and share knowledge, which you have given to us of all of the things that you've created because you love us. And so we're learning more about that and learning more about your character. So we thank you for that opportunity. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. So it's the quiz, and I want to tell you that my depth of the knowledge is there's 7 different colors of lentils.
Yeah, yeah. So your first question is,
okay,
which country is currently the largest producer of lentils? And here are your choices: the U.S., Turkey, Canada, or India?
I'm going to say India. You didn't even put China in there.
No, didn't.
Yeah,
when you really think
shocker.
About Chinese cuisine, they don't use lentils.
Ah.
At least nothing I've ever tasted from Chinese cuisine, and I've tried a lot, but no lentils.
So they're missing out.
Yeah, they're missing out. So, Sue, what's your guess out of those 4, which is the United States, Turkey, Canada, and India?
I don't think it's us, although we eat them. And I'm pretty sure that India eats the most of them. I mean, goodness, they got so many dolls, you know, over mm-hmm. there that, but I don't know if they can grow enough, so maybe not. So, let's see.
Well, Turkey, you've narrowed it down to 50-50.
I'm going to departure from the usual China, since that's not an option. I'm going to say our neighbors in Canada.
What about you, Tom?
I committed to India, so it's probably Turkey.
It's Canada.
Oh, really?
Good job, Sue.
So what makes that lentils germane or conducive to Canada?
Well, there are a lot of plains up there.
Okay.
And so they have the space for it.
So
you can grow lentils in the United States. It's just that it's not that big a deal here in terms of, you go to a restaurant, one other than an Indian restaurant, where do you see lentils on the menu?
Mm-hmm. So here's my question. Is that something that is it easily in our temperate culture?
Yeah, we should have no trouble growing lentils. You should be able to grow them right here in Michigan.
Have you ever tried?
No, I haven't, but I've not seen seeds either, so I'd have to jump on Amazon or someplace to see if I could find some seeds. I'm not sure whether the ones that we buy are treated or not with anything, but if they aren't, if they haven't been heat treated or anything like that, then you should be able to just take lentils and grow them.
That'll be our challenge for the next growing season.
I'll find out by the next class or our next program.
Very good.
And you've given me an idea of something to try. Number two, lentils belong to what plant family? Is it the mustard family, the gourd family, the legume family, or the nightshade family?
Oh, legumes.
I would say legumes also.
And you would be correct. Always follow your sister.
That's right.
Most of the time.
She's 60-70% correct.
All right, so the next one is, which type of lentil is most commonly used in Indian dal dishes? Is it green lentils, red lentils, black lentils, or French lentils?
Red, maybe. I think I'm going to vote for red.
Tom?
You got me stumped there. I will... I don't see green lentils, so I'll say red.
And that would be correct. It's called Masoor Dal.
Very good.
A lot of the dals tend to be kind of yellowish to orangish in color. Okay, next one is, what makes lentils an especially sustainable crop? Is it that they require heavy irrigation? Is it that they fix nitrogen in the soil? They need lots of chemical fertilizers, or they only grow in tropical climates?
Well,
it should be easy.
Fixed nitrogen.
Yeah, that's what a legume is, yeah.
If it is easy to grow, it's raising its stock in my growing choices for next year.
Yeah, it should
Isn't
be
that one of the reasons,
grow.
Gary, that not only because they make like a zillion things out of soybeans, but isn't it one of the reasons when they're doing crop rotations, you know, because corn sucks it out of the soil and they use soybeans to help fix nitrogen and try to recoup some of the things that have been taken away?
Well, what actually happens with a legume is there is a symbiotic relationship between bacteria, which infect the roots. It's a situation where they can take nitrogen from the air and convert it into a usable form for plants in those little nodules. And then when those little nodules die or the plant dies, then the nitrogen is released back into the soil. And those nodules are growing and dying, so anything that's planted nearby will benefit from a legume being nearby.
Sounds good to me. I'm if it's easy to grow, I'm all in.
And the good thing is you don't have to wait until next month to find out if we can grow lentils in Michigan. You can, and grocery store lentils can be planted and grown. That's
really?
From my researcher over here, Laura. She checked it out really quickly for me. So
that's kind of awesome to have it all at your disposal or your fingertips.
Now, the negative in growing them would be like shelling peas. So it's going to be a little bit of work. You said something, Laura? Yeah, they have to be whole lentils.
In order to be...
Yeah, if they're processed...
In order to grow, yeah. To seed. Mm-hmm.
In other words, split peas are not going to make it.
No. Okay, number five. Which tiny lentil variety is often called the beluga lentils? You know, belugas, like the caviar.
Oh, isn't it the pui?
You want to wait for me to finish it? You want to guess right away?
Oh, sorry.
It's always best for you to hear the whole question. Okay, it says they're known as beluga lentils because they resemble caviar. Is it the red lentils, the black lentils, yellow, or green?
Oh, black.
Oh, that should be obvious because beluga caviar is black. You were going to say that, weren't you, Tom?
Of course.
Okay. All right, this one's going to be easy. You have a 50-50 chance of getting it right.
I like those.
True or false? Lentils contain more protein than most other legumes.
I'm going to say yes.
Well, the answer is actually false because they're behind soybeans, but they still are high in protein.
Sounds
actually,
good.
Sounds seems like that should be true then, because
and
it said
you don't
most
need to
other.
Soak them like you do beans.
I would have rewritten this question
nice.
As more protein than all other legumes, not most, because if you say most, you could get away with true. And if I was a student, I'd argue that one. Okay, number 7. What important vitamins are lentils particularly rich in, making them excellent, and here's your hint, for pregnant women? Vitamin C, vitamin D, folate, which is vitamin B9, or vitamin K?
Folate.
I would say folate also.
Yeah, that was a gimme when you heard the part about the pregnant women. They always give pregnant women vitamins that have folate in them, or do they give just folate, Laura?
They give multivitamins that have folate.
Yeah. Our nurse practitioner here can help me out here on the side. See, you should have put the things on.
Now, if I had known there was a quiz, I would have put things on.
Okay. All right, the next one. Which ancient civilization used lentils as offerings in the royal tombs, including those of the kings? And I had to change that a little bit so that it would have given away the answer.
I would just say it's Egypt.
Oh.
The answers
I'm
were.
I'm going to try to wait for the multiple choices.
She
right.
was
Greeks,
once,
Egyptians, right. Persians, Romans.
We all were unanimously Egyptians.
Yeah, because the original question was royal tombs, including those of pharaohs. So I said, "Oh, come on now! What kind of quiz is that going to be? That's like a free point."
Gives it away. Well, remember that isn't that in the Bible? You know, when the children of Israel were complaining about. Why did you lead us out here to die? Because we don't have lentils and fish and cucumbers and onions and leeks and things.
And
wasn't
meat,
that on the
yeah.
list?
Yeah, I think lentils was included. I'd have to go back and double check it. But all I remember is they were constantly complaining. I said, dude, you just got taken out of slavery. You crossed through a sea with the water as walls on either side of you, and it was dry land, and you were saved from the Egyptian army, and you're complaining? But anyway, I digress. So, which unusual cooking fact is true about lentils? One, or A, they must be cooked overnight like beans. B, they take over 2 hours to cook. C, they do not need soaking and usually cook in under 30 minutes. Or D, cannot be cooked in soups.
C.
Yeah, that was...
They're one of the easiest legumes to
yeah, they
prepare.
They are ready in 30 minutes. And if you want a quick meal, lentils is probably healthier, but not quite as quick as ramen noodles.
So
the staple of every college child out there, every college student out there.
So that's the fast food of legumes?
Yeah, I guess you could say that, but it's healthier. Now, and the two things that students live on in college is ramen noodles and what's
pizza.
The other one? Pizza. That's it.
That's not a vegetable.
You can put vegetables on it.
They don't always do that.
Okay, so the next one. The word lentil comes from the Latin word that means lens, which refers to what? This I don't even have to give you the choices for this. Is it?
Like eyeballs.
Yeah, is it? Its use is... In grinding flour, its lens-like shape, its nutritional benefits, its role in ancient medicine.
Lens-type shape.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious if you know what a lentil looks like. But, I mean, if you never cook, you might not get that one. All right, next one. 11. How many cultures eating lentils on New Year's Day? There are lots of them to do that. And what does it symbolize? A, good health.
Good.
B, wealth and prosperity, because they resemble coins, longevity, or fertility?
I'm going to vote for the money thing because they're round.
That's right. They resemble corns. It's wealth and prosperity. You were going to say that, right, Tom?
Absolutely.
Oh, you're doing good this
that's
week.
That's right. Silence is doing me well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Which color of lentil holds its shape best after cooking, making it popular in salads? Is it French lentils, the French green, the reds, or the yellows, or the blacks?
I would say the black or the green because they hold their shape. Because the like the red and the yellow, they tend to be the split things, and then it turns to mush more, and that doesn't work on your salad. So,
okay, you got it down to a 50-50. You said the French green or the black. Which one do you want?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the green.
I'll be different and go with the black.
Oh, you should have went with Tom this time. It's the green. Okay, number 13. Compared to beans, lentils are especially valued because they are A, lower in fiber, B, easier and quicker to cook, sweeter in flavor, or always eaten raw.
Always eaten raw.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're quick to cook. I can't imagine eating a raw lentil unless it was flour, maybe, and you made something with it.
I'm sure there's probably lentil flour somewhere, but...
Why not? There's chickpea flour.
Yeah. Yeah. Indians use chickpea flour quite a bit. You know, Laura, if there's lentil flour? Yeah, there is lentil flour.
It's so, 2 grams of protein per serving in lentils.
Wow, that's a lot.
Easy to fix.
Okay, we have one more.
Yep.
And it is, which country consumes the most lentils per person? This is a gimme. Oh. A, India. B, Canada. C, Italy. Or D, Ethiopia.
It's got to be India, all those dolls.
Tom?
I don't know. The Ethiopians eat a lot of lentils. So I,
they do.
But I will stick with my answer.
Which one is that?
That's Ethiopia.
Oh, you should have gone with India.
Yeah.
There's like over a billion Indians, dude.
Yeah, but it's per capita.
Yeah, but still, you see a lot more lentils in Indian food than you do in Ethiopian. I like them both.
All right.
Well, they have a nice spicy lentil.
You know, the reason that I love lentils is, well, for all the reasons that we talked about here, their benefits, but our mama, and Tom should remember this, our mama used to make a lentil soup, and it's still my standard of what lentil soup should be like. She used like the green, you know, brown lentils. She made it thick, so it was like a stew, and it had like, didn't have all these veggies like some of the newer ones, which are good for you, have in there. But she was more of a purist. It had the onions in there and a bay leaf. And I remember liking that a lot as a kid and as an adult and being shocked when we got to our home ec class and our teacher did what I considered to be terrible. Because she put tomatoes and carrots and other things in there, and I thought that lentils should always be just lentils with the onion.
Well, there are lots of different ways that they make them. So there's a guy named Daniel Russo at our church.
There's no lentil police in the world, but that was my gold standard for lentils, and I always liked them, and I still do.
Yeah.
Well, very good. Well, that was quite a lentil quiz, and we'll be right back to talk about the growing season and much, much more. You're listening to Good Growing with the Garden Guy, Gary Heilig, Sue Majeure, and Tom Majeure. We'll be right back.
This is Ruthie Calkins from Tustin. The Bible tells us that heaven will be the dwelling place of God's friends. That's why I'm so excited about supporting Strong Tower Radio. Their unique blend of thought-provoking speakers, stirring inspirational messages, and heartwarming music reaches into the lives and hearts of each listener, helping them to develop and cherish a friendship with God. If this radio station has been a blessing to you and your family, why not join me and hundreds of others in supporting Strong Tower Radio with a financial gift? They're 100% listener-supported and could really use your help right now. You can send your check to Strong Tower Radio, Post Office Box 567, Cadillac, Michigan 49601. Or you can visit their secure website to use your credit card at strongtowerradio.org. Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with Good Growing with the Garden Guy, Gary Heilig, Sue Majeure, and Tom Majeure. Hey, that was quite some quiz we had.
Yeah, you did pretty well.
Well, thank you, thank you. I listened to my sister, so.
Yeah, good idea.
It's never boring to do these quizzes. I look forward to them.
Yeah, I'm really having to dig deeper to find things we haven't talked about. So if anybody has any suggestions of what we should do a quiz on, send them to Tom.
All right. Yes, that's Tom at strongtowerradio.org. strongtowerradio.org. Hey, Gary, we're coming up on September here. What's been happening in your neighborhood? And I'll share what's in my neighborhood.
I've noticed that the leaves are starting to fall.
Ooh.
We've had some cooler weather. And we're right in the middle of the harvesting season. So in our neighborhood, we're finishing up in sweet corn right now, which was really good. We have tomatoes coming out of the garden. People are harvesting melons. And, of course, they've been harvesting zucchini for a couple of months now. And pretty soon we'll be harvesting our winter squash. Summer squash has been coming on. So this is like prime time of getting things from the garden.
Right.
This is the time of the year that you can go out to your garden and get a whole meal.
And it's the payback time. It's the reward, return on investment time.
And if, say, for instance, you have potatoes in the ground, but the vines haven't died down, you can still dig in the soil, get some of the potatoes, and let the others keep growing. So you can get everything you need.
All right. You know, I had quite a attack of the hornworms. Literally, we were going into the recording last time. They were just hammering me. I mean, defoliating a couple plants.
Yeah,
completely.
They get pretty big, so they can munch quite a bit.
Yeah, I had at least 72 of them that I...
Oh, shoot.
I'm serious. And
was this in the greenhouse?
In the greenhouse, yeah. It was a really tough year. But then we had... It's like we got over the curve. I saw... checked on the internet and said the season life is about 3 weeks or something mm-hmm. like that. And we had to leave. And it's like, I saw it was past the peak and I was wondering about, I'm going to be gone for 10 days. What's going to, you know, it could be completely defoliated, but literally it was at the end of the tail of the curve and not much damage after that. But it was a bit scary there for a while.
See, what you need to do in a situation like that, you know you're going to have the hornworm every year.
Right.
So there is a newsletter from campus, Michigan State University, that'll tell you when different pests are coming out. Or you could just go to AI and say, when do the moths or when do the hornworms emerge from the pupa in Michigan? And they'll tell you roughly when that is. And, of course, when they emerge, they're emerging as adults. They have to have a certain amount of time where they're going to start laying their eggs and mate and lay their eggs. And then there's a certain amount of time before the egg hatches. It's usually just a few days. So you can ask all those questions of AI, and it'll tell you about when you need to start spraying. And there's a bacteria that you can buy. We've talked about it before. It's called Dipel, Thuricide, Impede. There's a number of different products out there. And they're what you call biological pesticides. And when you spray this on your leaves, when the larvae are first coming out of the egg, they're very susceptible to this pesticide. And they ingest it. And this is an endotoxin that really wrecks their digestive system. And they get sick pretty quickly, and they'll die before they ever get to the size that where they could do damage. So if you have to be away for a while, and you're at the point where they're going to start laying their eggs, you just spray your crop with Dipel. It's good for about 3 to 4 days. And since you're in a greenhouse, it's not going to get washed off. The only thing I'd be concerned about is if there's any problems with the temperature in the greenhouse, because it can get really warm, and that I'd have to research. But otherwise, you get about 3 or 4 days worth of protection.
That's going to be my strategy for next year. But you did a nice lead in to AI assisting in gardening.
Yeah, people don't realize how helpful it can be. And I use it a lot. It's much better than having to search the web for certain things. And let me give you some examples. When I use AI, What I might do is I'll say something like, let's say I have a chemical that I've lost the label for. Now, you can go to, say, Google or whatever and ask for a specimen label for the crop name, and it'll give you the label. But if I'm only interested in, can I use this particular product for this particular pest on this particular plant, I can just ask AI. And it will scan the whole internet to find out that for me. And then I'll say, well, how much do I use? It'll find the label and just tell me. Or let's say, for instance, that I want to design a flower garden and I tell it what zone I'm in, like we're in zone 5B, and I want all perennials, and I want a list of plants that will start to bloom in mid-May and will continue till September. And I'll ask me, give me a list of those plants, and it'll do that for you. You know how long it would take you looking through books to do that? Or I might want to buy some plant, but I have no idea where to look for it. I could just say to ChatGPT, I want to buy this particular variety of an avocado tree. What nurseries in the U.S. will carry it?
Mm.
And they'll do that for you, too. And they'll have a little link there that you can just click on, and it'll take you right to that nursery. Or if, let's say, for instance, you said, what are the most non-allergenic plants, flowers that I can plant in my yard because I have hay fever or whatever the case is, it'll tell you that, or attracting butterflies or whatever you want. Or maybe you just want a white garden. Tell me all the white flowers. It'll ask you, well, would you like a list of annuals or perennials or whatever? And it saves so much time.
Now, some of our gardening friends are not that familiar with AI. What, there are different AI engines or sites to go
to? There are many different ones. I use ChatGPT. Sometimes I use Google Gemini. The one that Elon Musk has done is called Grok, G-R-O-K. And the other thing you can do with AI, just pick one of them, like I'll use ChatGPT because I use it a lot. You could say, I want to do this. What would be the best AI that will help me with this? And it'll list the ones that'll be the best.
Wow.
So it is really good. And one of the things I did the other day is I wanted to repot my pineapple plant. And it's growing big enough to where I'll probably get it to flower next year. And so I asked ChatGPT, I said, what is the ideal soil mix for a pineapple plant? Just told me. So then I went out and bought the stuff and made my mix.
My imagination is running away. Could I ask it a question? I'm planning to grow tomatoes, sweet peppers, and cucumbers. What is the pH I want to do all three of these plants to have only one mix?
You could. If you wanted, you can get down to a particular plant. Let's say you want to know what's the best pH for peonies or whatever, and it'll tell you what the best range is. And now with your things that you just said, a general slightly acidic pH, it will take care of all of them. But if you wanted to know the exact pH in which one of those plants or all three of them grew, yeah, you could ask ChatGPT or some of the others that.
So could you ask it this question? For my area, and I don't know how specific you, I'll say Cadillac, Michigan, what is the optimum frost-free date?
Oh, yeah. It'll tell you that easily. It'll tell you when the last frost is likely for your area, first frost in the fall. If you ask what are some good cultivars of tomatoes to grow for a particular use for your area, it'll do that. I mean, it's just unreal. And they're only getting better.
Are there any other items that you would like to our listeners be aware of for applications for AI?
Well, if you were a new gardener, for instance, and you had no idea where to start, you could tell AI, I'm new. I don't know anything about gardening. What are the first and most important things for me to do? You can ask it to design a garden for you, and it'll draw it out. You can. It might ask you some questions like, "What do you like to eat?" and "How would you like it laid out?" or whatever. It's you can have a conversation, and realistically, there's a way you can actually set it up to where you use your microphone and you can physically talk to it, and it will physically talk back.
Mm.
So you can have a conversation.
So in other words, let's, for example, if I said, "I'm new to gardening, and I work second shift, so I'd like a garden that blooms at night and smells great when I'm awake. How do I start?" It would be able to find out for you.
It would be able to do that for you. It'll search all of the knowledge on the internet and come up with what you want. It is absolutely crazy, Sue. And it's such a good tool that will help you to save time and whatever. And they're, I don't know if they have this yet, but they'll have things where you'll be able to upload pictures of a pest. And they may have this because I didn't research this before, but you could upload pictures of a pest. It'll tell you what it is. And you can direct it and say, when is this going to show up? What kind of damage will it do? When should I be concerned about it? What kind of products can I use? You can break it into conventional or organic. How often am I going to need to spray? And it'll tell you all of it in the order that you wanted it. So it's,
wow, it's, that's really impressive.
It's,
and time saving if you don't have time to go down to the library and spend your life there.
Right, yeah, it can cut a lot of time off. And for instance, if you wanted to, say, start a pineapple, and I used to do this myself as an extension agent, people would call and ask about these things. And if I didn't know something, which after, 20 or 30 years, you know quite a bit. But if I didn't know something, I would look it up on books or I would search the internet. But the searching part could take a while because you had to know where to search. And now with AI, a lot of the things that I used to do in the office are obsolete now. All you have to do is know how to ask the right questions.
Amazing.
Isn't that great and useful?
Yeah, very useful. And that's why I brought it up, for people to realize what's at their fingertips. And the way they work it right now with ChatGPT-4, you can ask questions, and then it'll say you've reached your limit for the day, which you'll be able to ask quite a few questions. But then all you have to do is open another window and go back to ChatGPT, and you get a whole bunch of new ones. And it doesn't cost you anything. But I would like to add this.
Okay.
It really is costing you something because AI requires a tremendous amount of energy to do all that processing. And what it's ending up doing is it's going to raise everybody's electric rates. So that is one negative. And they're already being raised in certain areas.
Very good. Well, let's talk about grapes. What do we need to think about grapes?
Well, as we're coming into September, grapes are coming in, but there are threats. You might remember a movie. It was called Field of Dreams.
Okay.
And there was a statement in there, if you build it, they will come.
Correct.
Well, I kind of do a play on that. Say, if you plant it, they will come.
So, and those are probably pests that damage your crops.
Or just completely take it. And for instance, with the mammals, we have deer, which, they're pretty big. They'll eat all your grapes. And after those guys are the raccoons. They go up on my deck. I have a grapevine that's kind of growing wild along the deck. And I didn't bother pruning it this last year because the raccoons come up every year and they eat all the grapes. They just come on the deck and eat the grapes. And there are possums that will eat them. Squirrels and chipmunks will come and eat some grapes.
Foxes.
Pardon?
Foxes too.
You might have some foxes or coyotes, but they're not as big of an issue as some of the others. Just like you'll have problems with bears too, because they'll eat berries, but the bears aren't always a problem in our area. But as you go further north in Michigan or in the Upper Peninsula, you can have bear issues. Starlings and robins like to feed on them, crows and blackbirds. So the best way to deal with them is you can buy these nets that are for grapes, which are tightly woven nets. And they come in different lengths, because in a grape vineyard they have long rows of grapes, and you can buy these and just cover your grapes over, and that will take care of your problem. Nothing will be able to get to them then. So that's what I would suggest if you're having problems with them. And you can even have wild turkeys come in. Usually in August, you'll have some insects that'll feed on them, like Japanese beetles are the big ones. They'll feed on the leaves first, but they will feed on the grapes also. So those you'll have to treat with an insecticide. And usually as we go into the fall and there's a need for sugar for the wasp, they will be attracted to the grapes also, and they'll chew holes in them and make them useless. So it'll be a little bit more difficult for them to get to it with the cover on it, but if the cover sides are open, they'll get in there still.
You know, I'm thinking about something a little tangential, but I was down in Alabama, Sealy, Alabama to be specific, and I was amazed. They have a large garden, probably 2 acres or something like that, and there were plants that I have never seen before, never grown.
Mm-hmm.
Threw me off that there are literally plants that they grow that we don't.
What part of Alabama?
It was at least central Alabama.
Yeah, they're probably subtropical down there, and or what we call the semi-tropics or not.
They will get they get frost, so there are some things that they can't grow.
But how often do they get frost?
It's probably once or twice a year.
Yeah, does it get cold enough that it will kill citrus trees? Can they grow citrus down there?
I saw banana trees, but they said they have to grow, each year it has to grow back. They can't do it subsequent years.
Yeah, not edible bananas, but ornamental bananas?
I think they're edible.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, because you usually need at least 2 years to produce fruit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if they're dying back, I don't know if they're going to get any fruit. So. Yeah, they're further down south. So anyway, but there are trade-offs because it gets quite hot down there.
Yeah, and there are certain grapes that they can't grow because of the heat.
Yeah, they grow what's called Labrusca grapes, and the grapes that we grow in the north are called vinifera grapes. So ours are basically crosses between the wild types that grew here in the United States and the European fine grapes, both table and wine producers. But they have to have a cold period, whereas the Labrusca grapes are a little different. They don't need as much cold weather. That's why you don't see apples in South Texas. There has to be a certain period of cold in order for them to produce fruit.
Well, very good. Well, that rounds out segment number two. You're listening to Good Growing with the Garden Guy. We'll be back after this break.
Hi folks, Jelaine Fenner here. We are definitely living in uncertain times, and for some of us, it's scary. Signs of the times are everywhere. Jesus is coming back soon. Read Revelation chapter 22. Jesus says, "Surely I am coming quickly." We at Strong Tower Radio have a free book for you called The Great Controversy. Go to the back of the book and read chapters 35 to 42. It'll help you understand the times we're living in and what's ahead. This book even has 800 historical quotes and 1,200 Bible quotes. I love this book. Call Strong Tower Radio today, 231-468-2087, and ask for The Great Controversy while supplies last. And if we don't answer, please leave a message asking for The Great Controversy with your name, address, and phone number. That's 231-468-2087. On Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with Good Growing with the Garden Guy, Gary Heilig, Sue Majeure, and yours truly, Tom. Hey, Gary, is it too late to grow garlic?
Now, first, I want to tell you why I put that in there.
Why did you put that in there?
A lot of the garlic that we have in the stores now is coming from China. I'm a label reader. And so I read labels where things come from. Now, China isn't quite up to our food handling standards in some cases. So I search for American garlic, mainly California garlic. But you can grow your own. And if you want to grow your own, we're getting close to the time when you want to start it, which is a little different. We don't normally think of mid-October as a time for starting garlic or planting anything. We're usually shutting down. But the reason why we plant a garlic in Michigan in mid-October is it's sort of like when you plant bulbs. They grow underground and establish a root system first. And by doing that, when you do get the clove, it'll be much larger. I mean, you can plant it in the spring, but you will have much smaller cloves. So if you want the stuff like you see in the stores, you have to do it right. The other thing is when you plant garlic, you want to plant it about 2 to 3 inches deep and about 6 inches apart. And you're planting the cloves so that the pointed end is up. And you don't have to fertilize it at that time. But once the soil starts to cool down, then you want to mulch there, about 3 to 4 inches of mulch. You could use straw or leaves or whatever you want to do. And then you don't really have to do anything until a spring other than make sure that they get watered if you're not getting rain. But usually in the fall in Michigan and in the Midwest, we have plenty of fall rains. But if we have one of those dry falls, you'll want to give it some moisture. And that's all you really need to do, and then you won't do anything else until the spring.
Talk about the whole season. What do you do in the spring?
Well, you're going to have to fertilize the garlic. And garlic is very sensitive to weeds. So you want to keep the area weed-free. It's okay to mulch around it to keep the weeds down. And then, of course, maintain the moisture. In fertilizing it, if you're fertilizing it while you're fertilizing your regular vegetable garden, then it'll get enough fertilizer. You don't have to do anything special for the garlic.
Very good.
I have a couple of questions.
Uh-huh.
First of all, what are the pros and cons of soft neck as opposed to hard neck garlic? And two, when can you expect escapes? I saw on a Chefy show that everybody's all excited about garlic scapes and cooking with them. So when could you expect that?
If I remember, you're going to get the scapes in the probably late spring. And for Michigan, hard neck garlic is recommended. And in terms
of flavor, better of the hard neck myself.
Yeah, and also you want to put it in an area that has fairly loose soil if you can. It doesn't grow as well in heavy clay soils, and preferably fairly fertile soils. In other words, if you're almost all sand, that's not the best place to grow garlic. Of course, you could grow it if you worked in organic matter with the sand, like compost or something like that.
Another question is storing crops. I know we've talked about that on past years, but we're talking about onions, winter squash, and potatoes.
Yeah, and the reason I put that in there is a lot of times in the fall, you're getting a lot of produce, and some of the produce you can freeze and you can, and you're done with it. But other produce, like the tomatoes and the onions, they have to be stored. And how long you can store it is dependent upon the conditions in which it's stored. For instance, when we're talking about root vegetables like beets and turnips and rutabagas and parsnips, carrots, those things like to be slightly cool, a little higher humidity, and dark. Now, most people don't have ideal conditions like that. So you're going to probably have to either make something out in your garden, or you can store them in moist sand. And but you think about how practical that is if you have a lot of stuff. And I guess the best thing to do if you can't process it, use it up as quickly as possible. But most of these things will only last maybe a month or two, depending on the conditions in which they're in. And that means you have to put really good quality produce in storage. It can't be damaged and that type of thing, because otherwise you'll start to get mold and bacteria growing. Whereas when you're talking about garlic and shallots and onions, they prefer cool, dry conditions. And a basement will work pretty well. For a while, you could store some things in your garage because they'll be fairly cool and dry as long as the weather's not very humid, but our humidity tends to drop as we get into the cooler weather. The thing that you have to worry about in storing some of these things is if you're storing them in a place where there are rodents, they're going to find them, and they're going to enjoy them. So you have to think about that also. Potatoes have to be in a dark place too. They tend to like to be in cool but not cold, because if it's cold, then the starches turn to sugars. And they need circulation, air circulation, so the air can't be stale. And if you store potatoes in a place where there's light, since a potato is not root but it's modified stem, it turns green because it starts the process of photosynthesis. And when that happens, certain alkaloid poisons are produced. And I mean, you won't get sick from eating a little green potato, but if you ate a lot of them, it could cause you some upset stomachs. It's not going to kill you, but you're not going to feel good.
What is the longest you can store a potato?
Well, if you think about when new potatoes come in, which is usually in the late summer, early fall, and then they're stored, and most of your potatoes that are grown in Michigan can be stored for months under ideal conditions. In a home situation, if they're not treated with an anti-sprouting material, which some potatoes are treated, not the organic ones, but a lot of store potatoes are treated that way so that they don't start growing. If they're not treated at all, then they're going to start growing. And it won't take long. It'll usually take about 2-3 weeks, and you'll start seeing little stems growing. And as they're growing, they're using up the stored materials in the potato, so the potato starts to shrivel and get soft. I mean, you can still cook with them up to a point, but they just aren't as crispy as they were. So try your best to get as close to the conditions that you need. And of course, this is another thing that you could use AI for, is you could say, I would like a chart that would tell me the ideal temperature range and the humidity range for all the vegetables, and it'll spit it right out for you.
We find that around January, February, the potatoes that have been harvested, usually you better start using them really fast.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you could always make things like you could make hash browns or something and freeze them. Processing a lot of times will get things to last much longer. The other thing that you need to be concerned about when you're storing certain things is, for instance, at our house, we grow fruits and vegetables. So if you have fruit, you don't want to store them near certain vegetables. Otherwise, as the fruits are giving off things like ethylene, like the tomatoes will give off ethylene. Apples and pears and peaches and plums and all those things, if certain vegetables will not last as long because the ethylene speeds up the rotting process. And that's another thing you can ask AI. He said, what vegetables do I have to worry about being exposed to ethylene? And it'll just give you your list.
Boy, this has been the topic of the day.
Yeah, it's like your own personal helper. And I use it a lot for different things.
What about
winter squashes? Like, for example, Tom and Brenda have grown blue Girardelles, and they're, you know, a type of pumpkin, a winter squash. How long can they, like, let it, should they keep it, obviously not freezing, but, like, in a cool place, and how long before they have to use it? So, in other words, she can cook it and, you know, puree it and freeze it, but if you just want to keep the veggie till a certain thing, or you don't have time to process it right now, how long can you get away with?
If you have them under ideal conditions, they can last about 2-3 months. But as they get older, they tend to get drier. So the quality starts to go down. But you can get a couple of months out of it pretty easily, assuming that they're being stored in a fairly cool, dry place.
Now,
good to know.
I like one of the topics that you put down here is dividing perennials. That's fun. And What
so it can be a lot of work, depending on how big your perennials are. And, yeah. And some of those perennials will have some pretty good root systems. So it's not always easy work. But the things that you watch out for when you want to know when is it time to deal with your perennials is, one, they start to grow more slowly. The flowers are smaller, or they don't produce flowers at all. You might notice in certain type of perennials that the center dies
basic
out.
Saying from season to season. You say last year it was
this. They start to go
this.
Downhill, yeah, as they're going downhill. Another thing you might find is like daylilies, for instance, and irises, the middle of the plant will die out. And you just have like a ring around the outside. That's an indication that you need to do it also. Or if it's outgrown its space. Some people will grow their perennials in pots, and some of them can actually crack a pot depending on what it's built from or made of. Or maybe you have a smaller garden and you have a plant that's just taken over the garden. That's a pretty good indication that you might want to divide it and either spread it out or give some to your neighbor, whatever the case may be.
What about lilacs? It's been a while since it's not the blooming season, but is this a good time to divide your lilacs?
Well, you can pretty much, you'll have smaller lilacs growing toward the outside, and you can pretty much take a shovel and dig up a section of a lilac, the younger plants, and move them anytime during the year. It's just that if you're doing it during the hottest part of the year, you're going to have to be sure that you make sure it's well watered. But you could do it now, or you could have done it in August, or July, or June. You can pretty much do it during the course of the year. So I could say that it would be safe to do it up to about October before the ground freezes. It would be nice to get it established and have some time to develop some roots before the winter comes.
I'd like to close out with this topic, and then we'll have something to have a little bit of a spiritual aspect. But rye cover crops in the fall, what's there to be negative about that?
Well, one, if you allow it to grow too tall, it makes it more difficult to incorporate. Also, makes it more difficult to kill it. So if you allow it to grow too tall, it'll produce seeds, and then you'll have more rye growing in the garden when you want to have your vegetables growing. But there are more advantages than disadvantages because the reason we put a rye crop in is, one, if you're on a slope, it'll help to hold the soil there. As the rye crop grows, it looks like a lawn, and it can help to shade the soil, which will make it difficult for a lot of weeds to get going. And it actually excretes chemicals from its root system that tend to make it more difficult for certain seeds to germinate. And that can also be a negative, because if you don't turn it under soon enough and allow it to rot, then it can cause certain seeds to not want to germinate. And I made a list here which seeds tend to be more susceptible. Carrots, lettuce, spinach, beets, radishes, snap beans, peas, basil, cilantro, parsley, and then a few flowers too, like marigolds, zinnias, and cosmos. So you want to get it incorporated as early in the spring as you can. What I normally do when I plant one of those is I'll go through it with the mower, mow it down, let it sit there for a couple of days, and then I'll come back with the rotor tiller and turn it under. And I would like to get that done at least maybe a month before I want to plant. And the reason I do that is because as that material is breaking down, the bacteria in the soil need to use nitrogen that's available. And if you have a lot of organic matter that has to be broken down, unless you add extra nitrogen, then there'll be less nitrogen available for the plants that you put in later. Mm. And you'll notice that because they won't grow very well.
I'd like to close out with this thought, gardening in a world made new.
Yeah. Laura and I were talking about this. And basically what it was about was, what is going to be different about gardening once the world is made new? And we talked about one of the things. We talked about growing zones, that you can grow certain things in Alabama that you can't grow in Canada, or you can't grow in Michigan. there won't be any growing zones. So you'll be able to grow anything you want. Another thing is when, let's say a peach tree. I know that my peach tree isn't going to produce peaches until mid-August. But we have an example of with citrus trees where they'll be flowering and producing fruit and have fruit ready to harvest all at the same time. So I think you're going to see more of that in heaven where either they will be producing in cycles or they'll always be producing fruit. They'll be at different stages.
Mm-hmm. Pardon?
Tree of life.
That's right. And yeah. Well, the tree of life will produce a new fruit every month. And also another thing that we won't have to deal with is there'll be no diseases. So there'll be no spraying. Your fruit won't rot. And an example of fruit not rotting is with avocados, they can hang on the tree for months and then they won't ripen until you pick them off the tree. So I can see in heaven that it'll produce crops that aren't going to rot. They're not going to get old and you're not going to have to say, oh, we have to hurry up and eat that before it rots. It'll be hanging there for when you're ready for it. And of course, there'll be no insects or animals. Now, I won't say that animals won't eat some of the things from the trees, but they won't be like a bird that goes down your strawberry row and puts holes in everything. I can see them coming in, eating some strawberries, and you won't care because there'll be plenty for everybody. And then we won't have crop losses due to hail, due to drought, due to flooding, no frost, no freezes. We've talked about pruning in the past where we want to remove unproductive wood and we want to remove diseased wood. There'll be none of that. No pruning, only training. So people will, that are artistic will be able to train trees to look very beautiful. And there'll be no need to water because in the original earth, the mist came up from the ground. So no watering cans going and getting everything in the middle of the day because everything is drooping. Another thing, everything is going to be larger. We think about the grapes that the Israelites saw when they went to the promised land and they had to have a pole and two men carry a cluster of grapes back. And over here, we have small, fairly small grapes. And we have to realize that our whole earth has been messed up and we'll talk about that next month. And the earth doesn't yield as much as it could. So we're going to see larger crops. And another reason I know that is Adam wasn't a small man. So he's not going to be eating these little clusters of grapes. Everything's going to get bigger. There was some research. Oh, we're out of time, aren't we?
We'll have to save that for next month.
We'll save that. I'll tell you about the research where they grew these huge plants by manipulating our atmosphere and stuff.
Absolutely. Well, what a beautiful way. We're going to have to make this a frequent way to close is with a beautiful thought of a better world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be cool. And lawyers will be out of business, police will be out of a business, but gardeners will just be coming into their own.
I like that. Well, until next time, you just heard Gary Heilig, Sue Majeure, and yours truly, Tom Majeure, for the Strong Tower Radio Network. God bless and good growing. Bye now.